Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode of the Football's History Rewind, where we cover gridiron history year by year, our focus is on the games, teams, and titles of the 1893 and 1894 seasons. We have these stories and so much more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history and football history rewind, where this series we go through football history year by year. And what's some great and exciting revisions and history we are covering today? The years of 1893 and 1894. In last episode, if you remember, we talked quite a bit about the 1893 season and its rules revision roller coaster. What we did not have much time to talk on was the top team in the country that season and some of the fantastic players that played. Well, the champions of 1893 were undisputably the Tigers of Princeton University. At least that is who organizations such as the Helms Athletic Foundation, Holgate System, National Championship Foundation, and the Billingsley Report nominated. The team was a wrecking crew on the football field, registering a perfect 11-0 record while compiling 270 points for and a mere 14 tallies scored against them. The selection of Princeton was not unanimous, though, as years later, our favorite historian Park H. Davis stated that he felt Yale University deserved the 1893 crown despite suffering a loss to the Tigers at the end of the season, which kept Princeton undefeated. In my opinion, I don't think that Davis's crowning of the Eli was very strong. In fact, it appears to be quite off the mark. I mean, when you have a team that defeats another team and that team stays unbeaten, I just don't understand how you can come up and say that they're co-champions. Well, Princeton was led by Captain Thomas Doggy Trenchard, who was, after an All-American season, went on to coach at other schools such as North Carolina, Pitt, and West Virginia. Okay, I know you're probably wondering, like I was, how does a guy get a nickname from an Ivy League school like Doggy? Well, apparently, Mr. Trenchard was well known for having a scruffy, shaggy-haired appearance, and his peers gave his direct association with our canine friends, and hence the nickname Doggy came out. And it's interesting, and probably not too far removed, to believe that Yale's dominance might have been interrupted by the departure of Walter Camp from the Yale program right after the 1892 season. Remember, he headed out west after 1892 to coach at Stanford University in 1893. Well, Princeton knocked off the mighty Yale 6-0 on November 30th, 1893, ending the streak of championships by the Bulldogs, as well as a 37-game unbeaten streak. The website SaturdayBlitz.com brings up an interesting point of fact that sometimes history does repeat itself. The 1893 game mirrored the 1889 final game of the season between the two schools. On both occasions, Princeton ended a 37-game winning streak of Yale and a run of Yale championships. Pretty ironic there. Well, speaking of Walter Camp, he and Casper Whitney placed five Princeton players on their All-American list for the 1893 season. In addition to N. Doggy Trenchard, Tigers teammates Langdon Lee at tackle, Art Wheeler as a guard, Franklin Morse at halfback, they were joined on the prestigious list along with quarterback Philip King of Princeton. It's quite odd that when we look at the other seven players on the list were first-team All-Americans attended either Yale or Harvard. So just those three schools were representative on the All-America team by Casper Whitney and Walter Camp, 1893. But football was not just being played in the East, and at that point either. The sport was growing to campuses across the country, especially in the South. Tulane, Ole Miss, and LSU started their programs in 1893. And Tulane, with its urban campus, really brought the sport front and center with large crowds that they drew early on due to their populated location in the heart of New Orleans. Tulane soon challenged LSU to a game, and the first Battle of the Rag was played, with the Green Wave of Tulane winning the initial matchup 34-0 over the visiting Tigers. Well, the Rebels of Ole Miss, though, they fared much better when they traveled to New Orleans, and they knocked off Tulane 12-4 on December 2nd, 1893. Other schools also started a formal football program, the University of Texas in Austin, Albany College, which is now Lewis and Clark College in Division III level of play, Oregon, Oregon State, which at the time was called Corvallis, and their nickname was the Aggies, not the Beavers. Corvallis, well, they pummeled their first opponent, Albany College, 64-0 on November 11, 1893. All told, over 100 colleges fielded teams on the gridiron. The game of football was growing by leaps and bounds. And that takes us to the 1894 season. It was a different animal altogether, and there was no clear-cut champ. In that college football season, the official NCAA Division I football records book listed Penn, Princeton, and Yale as having been selected as joint national champions. There's a little bit of controversy to that. Let's get into that. Yale, well, they were 16-0 that year, while the Penn Quakers went an unblemished 12-0. Okay, I understand those two being tied for it. I don't think they played each other. But Princeton, they sported a record of 8 wins and 2 losses. Those two losses, they came at the hands of Yale and Penn. So I'm not sure how it was conceived that they deserved to be co-champions with the Bulldogs and the Quakers. However, the team was retroactively named to the national championship by one selector, the Holgate system. Possibly only by the mere fact that they outscored their opponents 204-44. There were some firsts in college football too in the season of 1894. On November 29th, the college football was played in the first time in the state of Florida by Stetson University. There was also 3 football conferences that started up that year. The Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Association, which included every member of the current SEC except Missouri and Arkansas, as well as 6 members of the modern ACC. The SIAA, as they were known, stayed active until 1942. The Maryland Intercollegiate Football Association, well, they started up that year too, and they were active for 6 years until their conference ended in 1899. And finally, the Michigan Intercollegiate Athletic Association, which is still going strong, only as a Division III league. It was also the end of a line of a couple college football conferences, as the Indiana Intercollegiate Athletic Association and the Middle States Intercollegiate Football League both folded, playing their last organized season in 1894. Now, we are so glad that you were here able to join us today. We get most of our information from great historians like Park H. Davis, even though I don't agree with everything he said in today's thing. We also, this SaturdayBlitz.com, we got some great information from them and a little bit from Wikipedia too. So we have some great photos on our website. Make sure you check that out, pigskindispatch.com, and check out all of our great articles there. We also have all of our podcasts. We're nearing 600 different podcasts on football history on pigskindispatch.com. You can also find those at your favorite podcast provider or on the sportshistorynetwork.com, where over 24 individual podcasts are housed for your listening enjoyment for all sports historians of all sports of all eras. So we look forward to that, too. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.